The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Case 21 from the Book of Serenity. Yunyan sweeps the ground. As Yunyan was sweeping the ground, Dao Wu said, "You're hard at it." Yunyan replied, "You should know there's one who isn't hard at it." Dao Wu said, "So is there a second moon?" Yunyan held up his broom, saying, "Which moon is this?" Dao Wu desisted. So a lovely summer morning, sitting quietly in the Zendo, all of us embarking once more, all of us returning once more. This path that only leads here, this path that never ends. This story of two Dharma brothers, they were both students of Baijiang, Yunyan and Dao Wu. This little drama of friends playing together, fellow travelers, as all of us are, and as we study and practice and work together over the days and months and the years, all of us have our little dramas as well. As we work together, seeing things differently, as we work together, coming across a misunderstanding, "I thought you said..." How could you say that to me? The drama of human life, the full entanglement, as Modu reminded us the other night, the full entanglement of human life, so difficult and confusing, and so precious. I was so struck by what both Melissa and Alan said on our first evening last night. Melissa is speaking of the simplicity. How do we simply live? How do we simplify when we have these minds that are designed to cause trouble? These minds seeing only a small fraction of the universe and thinking that we see the truth. "Oh, I see how things are. You're like this and I'm like that." And we go on our merry way, all of us living in the worlds that we construct. And the opportunity as we come together for intensive practice is to begin to see a little bit how the construction business works. So difficult to catch ourselves or to bring awareness. So much of our behavior is habitual, and the whole sense operation, all of the senses, including the sense of thinking, just happen. You might say, "I am thinking." But of course, if you try to find the one who is thinking, where do the thoughts in your mind come from? Why at one moment are you thinking of this and at another moment thinking of something else entirely. It seems helpful to me, Joan Tollefson's image of mind states as weather, who owns the weather, a little excerpt we have in our sutra book. But mind states come, and sometimes feeling hopeless and overwhelmed, discouraged, other times feeling bright, feeling quite positive, quite optimistic. And we don't seem to be able to control what arises in our mind. If we try to control, we just get more entangled. And this possibility of sitting still, of letting things be, of letting ourself be, quite a challenge, as we're used to pushing ourselves around and trying to encourage ourselves to work harder and be a little better, focus harder. You know, we all do our best. We do our best rousing ourselves and coming and allowing yourself to care, allowing ourselves to care. I think none of us would be here if we didn't care so deeply about something. And I don't think any of us can quite articulate what it is we care about so deeply, what calls us on this pathless path, the road that is appearing here, the road that we make as we take a step forward, as we come into the zendo and bow, and walk to our seat, and bow to our seat, and turn, and bow to the sangha. Bowing and walking, bowing and walking, sitting still. A breeze comes in the window. Sound of a lawnmower in the distance. Simply living is not about simply controlling. Simply living is not about getting what you want. The Buddha's first noble truth, as echoed by the Rolling Stones, you can't always get what you want. And of course, sometimes we get what we don't want. Some piece of news or some disagreement, some opinion comes at us. Someone says, who do you think you are? Someone says something that catches us. It is this entanglement that is the path itself. So easy to imagine, to create some idea of the path, to create some idea of the Buddha way. And of course, we have to have some idea, some direction. We talk about it all the time. There is some way we're pointing, but if you think you know what it is, you are being, Dawu said, controlled by the demons of dimness and dullness, controlled by the demons of awakening. This is a project of awakening. This is the direction, transcendent and awakening sounds quite glorious. And it is extraordinary what is possible for us to realize as human beings. And what is possible for us to realize is beyond anything we can think or understand with the thinking mind. So how do we move toward knowing that we are already awake? How do we get closer to where we already are? By sitting still, and we can begin to see and appreciate the movement of the mind, and to see that it is possible to allow things to be, to allow whatever state you are in, I am in, can we just be with, accompany ourselves, be the Buddha who is kind of dull, be the Buddha who is angry, who is resentful. Quite wonderfully, everything arises on Sesshin. And quite wonderfully, we don't have to do anything with it. But entering in, allowing, bringing a kind of, we say, basic friendliness. Here I am judging myself. Here I am quite certain that I'm doing it wrong. Or here I am and I think I'm really doing quite a good job this retreat so far. I'll just keep going and I'll probably have a really great experience this afternoon. And, you know, and it goes on and on. And nothing wrong with any of this. But as we begin to create a little space between the brain and the skull, to create a little space between what is arising and who we think we are, who we experience ourselves to be. So in some ways, noticing the opinions of how we're doing, just noticing them as opinions, and returning again and again to whatever is here. The sensations, the sounds, the mind states. And we can begin to find some simplicity, and we might even say find some freedom. And this is not at all a freedom from anything. You don't get rid of anything. But there is this possibility of being with what is here, what we want, being with what we don't want, in some way that allows us to touch some wondrous essence, some wondrous truth. The wondrous truth, the wondrous function, Lin Shi speaks of. Your function in this moment is no different than the wondrous function of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And so, Yunyan was demonstrating his wondrous function by sweeping the ground, as all of us just demonstrated our wondrous function by washing the dishes, or pulling weeds in the garden, cleaning the bathroom, going to the officers' meeting, a wondrous function manifesting. And Yunyan and Dao Wu, long-time practitioners, senior practitioners at this point, and really committed to each other. Quite a beautiful little interchange here. Two seekers, two fellow travelers. And so Yunyan, simply sweeping the ground, this wondrous caretaking practice. So central to our Zen way, from the earliest origins in China, this work practice makes it sound not quite like what it is. So I do appreciate that we call it caretaking. And we take care of the things of this world that take care of us. We take care of each other. And in this taking care is the great expression of our love. And our reward for taking care is that we are taken care of as we take care of the world itself. Not in a, I'll do this for you and you do that for me, but in the activity of caretaking. As I put one more plant into the temple garden and can vaguely imagine the flowers blooming in three or four weeks, I have no idea if that will actually happen. It may and it may not, but in digging the hole, removing the rocks, setting the plant in, filling in the dirt, making sure the water goes down to the bottom of the roots, giving it a good chance. I give myself a good chance, to live completely. And in this caretaking, a new plant there, but activity complete, interaction complete, nothing more is needed. And so in washing the dishes, washing this dish, putting it in the drying rack, just drying this one dish, just cleaning this one sink, vacuuming the stairs. This is the moment you've been waiting for. And in this caretaking, ancient tradition, and I think indeed hardwired into us human beings to make a difference. We carry out our bodhisattva vows. The bodhisattva vows, not that you took on as something extra, but the bodhisattva vows that have arisen from the depths of your heart, as you have tried every day of your life to find your way, to follow your way, to find the meaning and purpose of life. Your search and your expression didn't start when you came to Zen. Is ultimately not about Zen, but about this deep urge, the deep longing, the deep love that comes, and that when we touch and express this, everything is at rest. We might say our koan, the koan of ourself, of our life, is in resolution. Of course, it does not stay. Nothing stays in a fixed position in this world of coming and going, but not a problem, because the next moment we have the opportunity to meet this next moment, to receive this next moment, to enter in. And this entering in requires us letting go. And we might even say dying to what has already happened, dying to the past moment. Lovely to do this, and then we go on, and then we have to do whatever is next. And so Yunyan sweeping the ground. Maybe this would be a good koan by itself. Yunyan sweeps the ground. How about you? What do you do? How do you express your love? Here, without moving a muscle, without saying a word, how do you fulfill your bodhisattva vows? So he's doing this, having a wonderful time. Everything's all set. And then his friend, Dao Wu, comes and says, well, you're hard at it. I don't know about you, but rarely do I like people commenting about how I'm doing. Oh, it looks like you're doing a good job, David, but maybe you're sweating a little bit. Maybe you're working too hard. Maybe that plant should go somewhere else. Maybe you should be doing something else. Dao Wu pokes a little bit here. And in one of the translations, Dao Wu says, comes and sees Yunyan sweeping, and he says, too busy. Too busy. Of course, we get poked all the time. Part of being in Sangha, part of the gift of Sangha is the gift of being poked. And if we stay around long enough, someone will really piss us off. Someone will hurt our feelings. Someone will do something that is so difficult for us. But our vow in Sangha and our vow on this retreat is to allow what is here to be here. So when irritation arises, the great thing about Sesshin is over time, some very little things can become incredibly irritating. I guess it's like a marriage that happens over the weekend, right? The whole decade after decade. Oh my goodness, that person next to me is breathing in a way that it's just going to drive me crazy. I just don't know, you know, or whatever it is. Oh, when they turn, they're just turning all wrong. And how can I practice when someone turns like that? Hopefully we can begin to see that the point of this is not that you need to correct your neighbor or someone else. We can let our tanto and teachers do that. But we can begin to see the arising of irritation. And we can begin to see that when irritation or discouragement or whatever arises, there is some possibility. There is some kind of energy, and life is all kinds of energy. No, nothing is excluded. Begin to see how it is to be the Buddha of irritation, to see the construction business, as I was saying, how the mind constructs things, constructs the world. And as the physicist and philosopher David Bohm says, the mind creates the world and then says, I didn't do it. It's not me, it's that person. Anyone can see that. So to begin to get to see this in any way, Dao Wu, Yunyan's good friend, comes over and pokes him. Says, you're hard at it. You're too busy. Yunyan says, you should know there's one who isn't hard at it. You should know. So his response is not, how dare you say that, but his response, in some ways we might say coming from his experience, when we are fully engaged in something, even something that might take great energy, maybe walking quite fast, maybe whatever it is, working hard. Maybe just sitting on the cushion, working hard. You're working hard, I'm working hard. Yunyan points to something more than this, maybe points to a bigger context. Don't you know that there's someone who is not working hard? We read our dim and dull a passage from the sutra book this morning, and the teacher says to the student, "So you think you're dim and dull. The one who has the opinion that you're dim and dull is not dim and dull." So we're working hard here on the cushion, returning on the chair, returning again and again, wandering away, realizing we've wandered away, coming back to this breath, to this moment, in this returning, this practice of returning. We can say it's hard work and drink lots of fluids and sleep during rest period, because indeed it is hard to do this. The karmic momentum of delusion is so fierce and so strong that it requires a lot of us to cut through courage and determination to cut through one more time. And yet this just happens. This wondrous function, the one who is not working hard in the middle of activity, the stillness Alan spoke about that we can take from the cushion into walking, the stillness that we can take into strolling through the garden. Don't you know there is one who is not working hard? Just thinking about finding a way to stop talking now and having a little trouble stopping. I kind of get into a groove and want to keep going, but I think maybe stopping here, someone who is not working hard, to realize it is possible to be cared for, to lean back into the arms of the universe, to lean back into the love and the life that circulates your blood and operates each of your billion of cells. So as we sit here, appreciating both sides, and maybe waiting for this evening or tomorrow to hear the outcome of this encounter, but I will read it one more time. As Yun Yan was sweeping the ground, Dao Wu said, "You're hard at it." Yun Yan replied, "You should know there's one who isn't hard at it." Dao Wu said, "So is there a second moon?" Yun Yan held up his broom, saying, "Which moon is this?" Dao Wu desisted. Thank you. Let's make a U-shape with the end of the zendo, and please sit comfortably. And we'll move into our Dharma dialogue, looking into the matter together. Anybody want to raise their hand? Oh, Steve.
So Zen is always a challenge for me. And challenge was trying to keep up with you, David, while you were talking. You made so many wonderful points. Mm-hmm. But I think one that particularly stood out for me was, for me, I describe it as the issue of agency. I respect the agency of others, and I respect my own agency. But I think the challenge for me is to not be pulled around by the nose by agency.
And what do you mean by agency?
I mean this ability to get myself in trouble, to do what I think I should be doing. You know, I think I make the right plan, and then it's off to the races. But I don't think it's necessarily the problem here is that agency presents this issue that I really get pissed off at the guy in traffic in front of me. And I see it all the time. And I say, well, yeah, that's, I'm being irritated by whatever they're doing. And it just, I figure Zen would stop it, you know, somehow it would answer, you know, it just.
That's where you're getting stuck.
Yeah.
Really, you know, I think all of us, I'm just going to assume all of us, don't get what we want, right? We're fighting reality all the time. That guy in front of us in traffic, that idiot, that horrible, we think, oh, I will never feel that way anymore. I will be a kind and compassionate driver or whatever it is. What a wonderful world it would be. But if we don't own the irritation, then we just fan the flames of it. If we say, I shouldn't be like this, then we start doing it to ourselves. Not only is that guy an idiot, I'm an idiot too. Why am I so irritated? And it just, this is what the Buddha taught about, he said it is possible in the Four Noble Truths to, these things do diminish. Right, this rage and anger, but not because we start fighting them. And he compared it to a fire, and we keep feeding the fire with more logs. You know, he's an idiot, I'm an idiot, blah, 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 blah. And his solution was to roll the logs away, to make more space, to go, oh, what is this irritation? Like in the middle of it all, I love, my favorite part of David's talk was when he couldn't find a way to end it. I think that's also, doesn't that happen? How do I end this? I'm so in it. Whether it's good, like David's talk, or bad, like the irritation.
Like Alan's talk.
You're right, no, that's right. But you know, we do make everything, oh, this is great, I want more of this, I want less of that. But this is what we've got. And when we try to fight reality, do you know who wins? Every single time, reality wins. Because this is the way it is. That idiot is going too slow. Or not, whatever it is, you know, I'm not even going to, you know what I mean. So this is a very humbling practice. When we really face into our own displeasure at the world or ourselves, somebody said to me the other day, it actually hurts. It hurts. And that's why we don't do it. We go, la, 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 Buddhism, Zen, I'm going to be so great. Instead of this real work, which we're all doing here, of sitting still and turning towards what's here, whether we like it or not.
Yes, Anne.
Yeah, I was back to the beginning of your talk when you're saying and how we make up stories about other people and how they think. And I thought, but sometimes we're right. Sometimes you see someone doing something over and you think, I better not trust them. And how you tell the difference between what you're inventing in your own mind for whatever reasons and what is the response to actual perceptions that we've noticed in their life. And it's hard to tell those apart.
Yeah, and I think this discernment, you know, we're constantly having to make choices in our life and who do we trust and what do we do? I like what Steve said about, you know, we do our best and then we see what happens. We make our plan. We think, okay, I think this person is like this. And then I guess it's partly to keep being curious even after we have an opinion, right? So even if our opinion is pretty congruent, it's never exactly right. And it may be always right, but sometimes only 5%, right? But sometimes it might be 95%. So seeing what happens, it's kind of very pragmatic in a sense, because sometimes you're going to get it right on the money, and other times you're going to be so far off, and you don't know until you walk into it in some way.
And it's not so black and white either. It's not that, that I'm right about this person or I'm wrong about this person. There's all this. Every human being is this vast mystery, right? I don't really know anybody else, not let alone myself, thoroughly. And for some reason, what keeps coming up is the trusting of a kind of physical reaction I might have to a person. And then maybe later I get evidence that, yeah, it was right to not trust that person. Or what was I thinking? This person's fine. And the example that keeps coming up, I am going to say it out loud, is that the very first time I ever saw the current president, I had a visceral reaction of, ooh. But I tried to give it a chance because I didn't know who he was and I never met him in person. And then, life has gone on. But the other day I saw a photograph of him sleeping in the middle of a meeting, an 80-year-old man sleeping in the middle of a meeting. And I went, oh. So it's complicated, right? I could hate him and also, oh, have this connection. Oh, you're a human being too, and you get sleepy in meetings. You know, right? It's complicated. So this is, I love what David said about continuing to test it, right? So who is this person in front of me right now? I don't know. So let me see if I can stop making right and wrong. Firm, firm, firm. You're an idiot. You're wonderful.
I also, Anne, want to bring together what you said with what Steve said, that you started by paraphrasing David saying, you know, sometimes we have a story about somebody else and we think we know what they're like. And sometimes we have a story about ourselves and we think we know what we're like, which Steve demonstrated for us. He gave us this great story about himself. I saw the twinkle in his eye, Steve. knew every moment he was making this story up. And I don't know if Steve was buying it, but I wasn't entirely buying it. and you know, this person that we think is the agent that has the agency, that's the head on top of the head. Mm-hmm. And then there's something that we can't limit in that same way, and we can't pin down. And we know as much through our guts as we do through our brains. And that one maybe is the one, and that's not so easily fooled by other people, and picks up on something. But I found that for me, you know, I've learned to pay a lot more attention to the gut brain than to the head brain. I find that it sends me in the wrong direction a little less often.
Thanks, Will.
What if your story about yourself is that you're indecisive, and then, you know, you might even be right? I'll take an example. Suppose you're in a relationship and you're asking yourself, do I stay in the relationship? Do I leave the relationship? Is it going to get better? Is it not going to get better? Is it fine the way it is? Is it not fine the way it is? The swinging back and forth between the days when you think, oh, it's fine, you know, or the days when you think, well, it's getting a little better. And then the days where you think, oh my God, let me out. It's very confusing. And if you have the habit, sort of, you know, of remaining in that uncertainty for a long time, I wonder what it is that comes, you know, that, because at some point you make it makes a practical difference. You know, you say, you know, I think I should call this off, or all right, I'm in this 100%.
Yeah, I wonder what it is.
Yeah.
But really.
Yeah.
You keep talking about you, but I suspect, I have a visceral brain response, that you're talking about yourself, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah. Good. It's good to clarify that, right?
Yeah.
And my curiosity is aroused in the same way it was with Steve. So what's wrong with that? You have, if you have some fixed view of yourself, you know, that does get in the way.
Yeah.
But what's the problem? Right? What's the issue here?
Because there are things like codependent behavior, for example.
Yeah.
And the nature of that is, it appears to be that if you knew that you were doing it, you wouldn't do it.
Yeah. How's that worked out?
Yeah.
It's never worked for me.
Yeah. But you know, that is a kind of, you know, I think, go buy books on codependency, they'll say, stop it.
Well, and that curiosity, I want to go back to.
Yeah.
So you're saying you're in a place that you don't like,
and
you identify, oh, this is me.
Yeah.
And so we can say, well, that's extra, but it sounds like you're really in this place. But you came from Boston to Worcester to go on this retreat. How did you do that? I mean, at some point, you made this plan, and I don't know how you did it. How did you get your feet to the ground this morning when you got out of bed? But it does involve a certain amount of suffering, because we all have our versions of this, and it's just we're against it, and it is our koan. Right? And so it's so hard to be there. So I don't mean to make light of it, but I genuinely do mean this curiosity, both what is this, and the truth is that you do make decisions, right? Like coming here and like other things. And to be curious, wow, when will I do something?
What are the exceptions?
Yeah.
And what are the exceptions? I have this very fixed view of myself.
Yeah.
But we can see all the exceptions David just named. And I don't want to throw psychotherapy under the bus or all those wonderful books about codependency.
But.
No, I really don't, because I think there's a place for that. I think that this is, Zen is not a solution to our problems. You know, if I had an illness diagnosed, I wouldn't just sit through it, right? I'd go to the doctor, right? I'd go for treatment. So there are treatments, and the thing that Zen has to offer is not fixing the situation. It's this generation of curiosity. What is this? What is this?
It's more comfortable to think about, I wonder when I decide what I'll have decided. But that's because that takes me out of the painfulness of the right now.
And thank goodness you have that capacity, really. All of us have the capacity to, as we say, pendulate, right? We're right there with it.
Yeah.
Zazen, I'm going to just face it. But we have comfort. I'm going to just not be with it right now. I need a break. And then it strengthens us for going back to the fire of this. So we need the whole thing, and we're not going to get everything fixed. I'm sorry to break it to everybody. And Zen is certainly not going to fix everything. But it will allow us to be more awake to these repetitive patterns, to see when we're doing them, maybe to wake up in the middle of doing them. You know, what was the word you used, Steve, for the going?
Agency.
Agency. Maybe to wake up in the middle of the agency and go, wow, look at this. I missed the train, but I got on another one, right? I got here. Yeah, this is, it's both and, it's all of it. It's not just one or the other.
Yeah, thanks.
And thank you so much, Will.
Yes, Craig.
Thank you for that talk. And what I'm taking away from it is the idea that you know, sweeping the yard, washing dishes is an act of love. Mm-hmm. And that it, we do it out of love, and we get back as well. And I'm thinking, okay, dishes, planting, but, you know, I'm saying, does it extend all the way out? I mean, when I'm doing things I'd rather not do, paying my taxes, hearing my cousin complain about my behavior and being patient with that, you know, is that love? Is that, am I going to get anything back from that? I'm going to be curious about that. What's the reciprocity in there? Mm-hmm. I could extend to think it's all an act of generosity, but it's easier with expecting the flowers to bloom.
Well, and I think this is why we practice where it's simple. Mm-hmm. This is why we come on Sesshin, because our cousins are incredibly complex, and we're going to be, you know, all of us have those people in our life where, but we're practicing meeting things this way. And I love being curious about, well, what if it is in my, what if I can choose to act with love in any situation, what's the return? Well, interesting to see what the return is.
I'll have lots of chances to experiment.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. And just, you know, that sometimes, I think quite often, there's no return, or there's no discernible return, and you know that, right? And can we do it anyway, because that's our inherent nature, to give?
Yeah. Thank you. Joy, were you putting your... Okay, you were moving your hand, so be careful. Paul was moving his hand, too. So.
Thank you, David, for your talk. And I appreciated this pointer about watching the construction. I said it at the beginning and also towards the end. And I like that. I like that encouragement. Sometimes I've heard, you know, the phrase, you know, we're not in the construction business, and gosh darn it, I am.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I mean, so it's just really watching it, and to see the story that even is around that, you know, like, I'm in such the construction business that I own a lumber yard and a limited number of nails. I can see this, and it keeps coming up, and then when I can watch that, I can also see how I'm actually held. And especially in the forms here in the Sesshin and those who are holding us. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to create that. Mm-hmm. This is that leaning back into that arm of the universe that you're speaking about. And, you know, as I'm hammering away, I realize that I can just drop that hammer. And I can go ahead and just lean back and feel the support of everyone in here, to hear your words, to see this encouragement. And I have to watch that construction build. You know, I really do have to watch that. And I will keep nailing as long as I want to, in some cases.
And you don't even have to drop the hammer.
No, I don't.
It will fall. You know, it's a little bit like Will saying, I'm hammering, I'm such an idiot, why am I, I'm hammering.
Yeah, exactly.
There's an intermediate experience that happens in Zazen where we actually feel the hammer in our hands. Mm. We feel that wood, we feel the weight of it. Mm-hmm. That's preliminary to it dropping away. Mm-hmm. Then we can, as we say, open the hand of thought. The hammer's still there.
Absolutely.
but we feel our tightness too. This happens a lot in real life, as they say, in traffic, going back to traffic. We can feel when we're really stressed driving how the steering wheel, like we're just gripping it. Right? And in other situations, sometimes in an argument or something terrible happens, we can feel the whole body clutching up.
Yeah.
The solution is not to ease up.
Right.
The solution is to be awake.
Yeah.
And then, as David said, the hammer falls away on its own. But if we do it in order to make the hammer fall, then the hammer just will stay here forever. The gripping will become habitual. You know, we'll have these pains in our bodies that are just from ignoring I'm not quoting you right, Alan. What was the phrase you used about the gut mind? Is that right?
The gut brain.
The gut brain. The gut brain knows a lot.
Yeah.
The visceral body knows a lot.
Yeah.
And it's much more trustworthy, in my opinion, than emotions, which, as Leonard Cohen says, come and go, and thoughts, for sure.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So there has to be the first before
the
O.
Or else I'm running around picking up the saw and doing all those other things as
well. Yeah. So, you have such a great lawn yard.
Yeah. It's great. I'm Matt.
Thanks for the talk, David. I was taken, maybe especially when you read it the second time or kind of came at it the second time, Yunyan, is that the name?
Yeah.
Yunyan, hard at it. And I relate to that, being hard at it and wanting to work hard and prove myself or, you know, just that whole thing of being hard at it. And I don't know whether Dawu was, you know, kind of testing to say, are you you trying to prove something here? Or like, yeah, what's going on here? And the ease with which Yunyan says, or just that I just sort of imagine that, yeah, I can be hard at it and not hard at it. You know, like can the effort, has a, he wants to clean the yard. It's not like he has no goal or purpose to his activity, but it's also not it's not owning him, and there's something very kind of intriguing about that.
He also knows that, you know, the yard will get filled with leaves and crud again, and so this isn't I'm going to get this done once and for all. This is what one of the things that needs to be done. And there's no end to it, and there doesn't have to be. And so, not hard at it in that way that you were talking about.
Yeah.
But just doing what is calling to him to be done. So it's a wonderful way of living.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back hard at it. So please restore the Zendo.